Second time of asking. How are you, Avery?
I'm doing great. How are you?
A little bit better this time now. The frog in my throat had decided to leave. You do a podcast about popes. Now, it's not exactly a crowded field, but you're not the only pontifical, if that's the right word, podcast. How do you differentiate yourself from the other podcasts about popes?
Well, we are ridiculous and silly, and we take a much more, rather than looking at the papacy just from a religious point of view, mm-hmm. we're a lot more focused on how the popes play a role in the tide of history. And then, of course, our big feature, the whole format of our show, is that in each episode, we talk about a single pope, and then we rate them based on some ridiculous categories that we've come up with that are mm-hmm. entirely subjective. And that's sort of how we gauge how good a pope is. So
what would some of these categories be? Like the amount of illegitimate children they had, how many times they were married, you know.
All of that falls into one category.
Rank pretty highly with you then.
Yeah, so our categories are, the first category is about the impact that they actually have on the papacy. So their contribution to religion, to the power of the papacy, to making the papacy something to behold. And then our next category covers all of what you just said. It's the scandal. It's the bad behavior. It's all the things that discredit the papacy. We also rate them on their impact on the secular population. So how they affected non-Christians and how they affected people outside of the church. Then we rate what their face looks like based on the depictions that are around in churches. And specifically, we use the images from St. Paul's Outside the Walls.
But you know what? If I'm a pope circa, you know, St. Peter going up to, I don't know, the early medieval period, I'm going to be pretty upset because we don't really have too many realistic depictions of some random pope circa the 8th century, do we?
We almost have no images from that time period. The only pope we found a very contemporary image of, and it's a very basic image, is Pope Damasus. And he's certainly not one of our earliest church. So that's why we use the ones from St. Paul's Outside the Walls.
Was he a bit of a hottie, though?
No, he wasn't one of our hot popes. We have had popes that we call Pope Caius, who is the 28th pope. He's the hot pope so far.
Gotcha. Right. Let's go back a step. Why are you doing a podcast about popes?
When I did my initial history degree, my actual specialty is the Italian Renaissance. And I'm mm-hmm. obsessed with everything Florence and the Renaissance and the Medici family. And as a Renaissance historian and looking to go in that direction, it becomes very clear, especially in that time period, that the Pope, you can't do anything without the Pope. They're a major, major, major political power. And so through my first obsession in history, I started to look at how influential and how impactful the popes were in every aspect of history that I already was fascinated by. And from there, it just became its own little obsessive rabbit hole. And suddenly I became the Pope lady.
Remind us how long the podcast has actually been up in existence now.
We just had our second year anniversary on May 21st. Now I'm going to cough. Yeah, May 21st was 2 years.
So you came in after Pope Francis.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. We actually celebrated in our first couple episodes. My husband and I, we went to Italy to get married. And so one mm-hmm. of our first couple episodes is my story of meeting Pope Francis.
What? Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. So please tell me you went to Italy to get married by the Pope.
Well, I wish. I wanted to have my Florentine Renaissance Medici wedding. So we got married in Florence. And we stopped in Rome beforehand to do the marriage blessing by the Pope and have the papal audience experience.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Podcast has been up for 2 years. You didn't care that there were other papal, that's the word I said used before, papal. papal podcasts and whatever, because you carved out a niche. You think there's a niche for you, for specifically for your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe what were your inspirations podcast wise and then maybe literature wise? What strands did you draw upon and, you know, for you to inform your podcast?
Well, podcasts were a huge inspiration because our formula that we've created about the popes is actually based off another show called Rex Factor, who mm-hmm. has reviewed and rated the kings and queens of England and now Scotland as well. So that was the first podcast I ever listened to, and I loved it, and I was so into it. And then they had some people branch off and do another series in the same format about Roman emperors. Mm-hmm. And so between my best friend and I, it became, why don't we do the same thing about popes? So Totalis Rancium is the Roman emperors one. Rex Factor is the original. We are absolutely 100% inspired by their formula. Mm-hmm. So that was absolutely the first thing that we went to. And then when we started digging into it, one of the sources that really stood out as being very entertaining is the Liber Pontificalis, which is the book of the pontiffs. And mm-hmm. it's written very much in the same way that the Historia Augusta is for the Roman emperors, where it's not accurate at all and incredibly biased and full of wild, outlandish stories that couldn't possibly be true. And those were the stories we wanted to tell. And so building off of that formula of telling these ridiculous stories and then placing it into the context of the real, more accurate history gave us a lot of that entertainment value.
So I can't remember how many popes there have been, but there have been a lot.
266.
So are you only going to run to 266 episodes?
Sort of, kind of. We will only run to 266 numbered episodes, but every time that we come across a major event that requires a little bit more, we do episodes that cover each of the major ecumenical councils. They get their own episodes. Sometimes mm-hmm. when a pope appears in a major source like the Canterbury Tales or Dante's Inferno, then we have to do a bonus episode reading those accounts and then discussing why they're important. So 266 popes with a lot of extra content in there.
Okay. So give us the idea of the structure, the internal structure of your show. Do you just go, this pope was born here, they did some Christian God-bothering stuff, became pope, did some stuff, then died? Or how exactly do you structure each episode?
Well, it starts like that in the sense that we try to tell the biography quite narratively, especially because a lot of the conflicts that exist in the church, especially with like when you're dealing with heresies and controversies that span several popes, it's a great way to kind of break it down and look, this is what this pope did with this information in his lifetime, and then carry it through the next episode without getting too bogged down in that one thing. Like, we will have popes who deal with the same controversy, and we'll have 12 or 13 popes who are dealing with monothelitism or monophysitism or anything like that. So we can look at that in the way of their personal biographical perspective, which makes it really interesting because, you know, you sometimes get a pope who will be presented with this information and he'll give an answer. And then the later podcast or the later popes are then condemning that pope initially for their decision. We have a pope who was excommunicated about 40 years after his death as a heretic because he gave the wrong answer. And so it allowing it to stand kind of as their life story, look mm-hmm. at what's happening around them, what they're directly involved in, and then what's told about them after, gives us a really great structure in terms of rating that individual.
Gotcha. Now, if I remember my kind of medieval European history, there were popes in Avignon, and then mm-hmm. one pope or even three popes. So you throw yes. in as well as part of the of your kind of list of 260 odd popes?
They don't count in the 266, but there are a couple. We are doing a series on Patreon where we cover all of the anti-popes. So any pope who is not considered legitimate by the official pope yearbook, it's called the Annuario Pontifico. If they're not in that, they end up on our Patreon feed. And so those three anti-popes will definitely end up there. But we also have odd circumstances where we have like a pope who was elected and accepted the papacy and then died before he could be consecrated. So we'll cover him kind of separately. And then once we run out, we're going to do all the people who like run cults and call themselves popes and self-appointed popes, because why not?
Why not? Now, a lot of he here. Now, I remember watching a movie and I was about eight or nine, but I was already a dyed-in-the-wool history head. Eight or nine. And it was about Pope Joan.
Yes.
And I remember on this movie, she gave birth whilst on the procession to become Pope. Please tell me you've got a whole spread of episodes either done or about Pope Joan.
We are absolutely going to spend a lot of time on Pope Joan. And she is definitely one of those Pope. A lot of people have asked if Pope Joan is going to make the main feed or the Patreon. And we are going to do her on the main feed in a series of episodes, covering all of those myths, because there are so many myths about Pope Joan. And she's still very relevant today. Only last year, they were finding papal coinage, which seemed to indicate the regnal name that Pope Joan was alleged to have had. And so it's still a very relevant and very controversial topic. And so we will be covering that probably for quite a long time. We're not quite there yet. We're about 300 years away in terms of where we are.
So what's your gut telling you? Was Pope Joan real?
I actually did an interview with the Smithsonian last year about this, and I think that Pope Joan makes for an excellent myth. I don't think there's a lot of
a myth.
I don't think there's a lot of basis in it.
Story. Go on.
It's one of those situations where if you look at what the legend did for Catholics at the time and what impact that has on the social structure of Catholic identity, and if you look at how it could benefit multiple people in the medieval world, it becomes clear that there's definitely a really strong possibility that she was this beautiful social construct that someone made up that just stuck around much longer than they intended.
One of my first questions to you should have been, are you a Catholic?
I'm not, no. I don't come from any particular religious background. I've always been really, really enthusiastic about, again, the historical impact of Catholicism in particular, and the aesthetic of Catholicism. And my co-host, she was raised in a Catholic environment. She's a lapsed Catholic now, but her father is a deacon in the Catholic Church. So she comes from more of that exposure than I do.
There's a lot of lap Catholics around at the moment. Joe Cohill says, I love her podcast. It's great listening, especially for a lapsed Catholic.
So, Joe, thank you, Joe.
Yeah, I'll give him a big wave, thumbs up. Thank you for tuning in, Joe, and listening. Here's a question. I've never been a Catholic, and I'm not even a Christian anymore, right? But how important is the Pope to Catholic identity now in 2020? How important is Pope Francis to a regular Catholic, would you say?
Well, I think that's a very big question with a lot of different answers, because I think in my personal opinion, I would hope he's very important to the Catholics of today. And I think having been there and having met him and witnessing how people responded to him at that meeting, I would say there are a lot of people that the Pope is extremely, extremely important to in the modern world. But I mean, then again, we have this whole, there's a whole movement that started after the Second Vatican Council called the Sede Vacantis movement, where they don't believe that there's been a valid pope since the death of Pope Pius XII. So I think okay. it's...
Hold that thought, right? and what happened then to make all subsequent popes not valid, according to what happened then?
It's a very complex movement, and they have a lot of strong feelings about it. But basically, what it boils down to is this idea of like the heresy of modernity, because the Second Lateran Council really, in simplest terms, modernized Catholicism for a lot of people. It adjusted a lot of things in terms of how canon law was responded and how the liturgy was used. So a lot of people.
Is that when they said that you could, lay people read the Bible in English? Is that the one?
It is that was definitely a strong point of it. There had been some movement about that before, but that is where it became like very, very strongly enforced and encouraged as an idea, right? Because they were trying to universalize Catholicism for the 19th, 20th, 21st century as we go on. So,
which is an interesting concept in and of itself, because they're trying to universalize the universal church, because Catholic means universal.
Absolutely. It's got such controversy associated to it, because a lot of people would look at the Second Lateran Council or Vatican Council and think that it has done wonders for the church in opening it up to a lot of people. And Francis is very much on that line, where he wants to talk about Catholicism and share Catholicism with people from all sorts of religions and from all sorts of backgrounds. And he wants to reach everybody. So there's a lot of people who would look at that and be very, 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 very excited about that. And then there are people who suddenly think that that makes him a heretic and therefore there is no pope.
How important is the tenure of Pope Francis been in terms of a very clear break, him being a Jesuit, him feeling much more approachable? How important do you think his tenure has been in terms of redefining not only Catholicism, but more the role of the modern Pope, would you say?
Well, I think the word you use, approachable, is one that's so incredibly valid when we're talking about Pope Francis, because that is one reason that I've become so incredibly enthusiastic about Catholicism and the history of Catholicism, because he represents something that I think, I mean, I know that there are a lot of problems in the church, and I also think that the tenure of Pope Francis is very important for exactly what's going on in terms of the controversy of the church now, because more than ever, we're starting to see those doors open and we're starting to see things talked about a lot more openly. Are we where we need to be with all of that? Absolutely not. We just need to keep running at it full force as they start to take baby steps. But I think that his tenure is incredibly important in bringing some of that. For Catholics, I'm sure it's important as well, but I think it's important because it brings a lot of that personal sentiment and positive viewpoint back to people who may be outside of the church, because he is so approachable and he does feel like somebody who genuinely wants to preach a message of love and acceptance and just, you know, good things.
So you're going to be part of Intelligent Speech on June the 27th. Why? Why did you want to be part of our merry band online of podcasters on that day?
Well, I think it's very exciting. I mean, I remember watching or hearing a lot about it last year. We weren't even on the podcast radar on that level quite at that point. But a lot of podcasters that I have a lot of respect for and a lot of admiration for were involved. And then I got to meet some of you all at Sound Education this year, which only increased that admiration and respect and enthusiasm for this type of event. We had a great time. So when we were invited, we were very, very excited and were prepared to jump at the opportunity to be a part of something that shares podcasting with everybody.
And then the last question is, what's your chosen topic going to be for your presentation and why?
Well, the theme this year, you know, is hidden voices. And we thought, what a perfect opportunity to bring a whole bunch of scandal your way. So we're going to be talking about popes who have had children. And specifically, we're going to look at two individuals who are children of the popes and who were born after their father took holy orders. So not when they were pope, but when they definitely shouldn't have been having children. And we're going to look at them and see how their relationship with their pope father impacted their life, because the two we've picked lived very, very close in time period to one another. They overlap quite a bit. And one pope embraced the scandal and one pope very much did not. So it had a very strong impact on their children's lives.
Bree Jensen, thank you for being part of Intelligent Speech, and thank you for doing a live chat with us. I'm proper excited, as we say in England, about your inclusion on Intelligent Speech. And I think you're going to get a whole lot more new listeners for your podcast.
Oh, I hope so. Thank you for having us. Thank you for inviting us. Thank you for spending some time talking to me. And thanks to anybody who's listening right now. Come join us. Come hear us talk about Pope kids.